Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hello, welcome. Locked On Timberwolves podcast, January 17th edition. Joining me in studio, Tom Schreier, co-founder of Cold Omaha, frequent contributor to this here Locked On Wolves podcast.
I'm here.
My boss, my editor.
I'm excited.
One of my bosses, David Locke, creator of the Locked On Podcast Network, would be the other one.
Yeah.
How are you doing, Tom?
Doing well.
Before we get into the bulk of the show here, let's do our Timberwolves mid-season report. Tom Schreier.
Yeah.
Conveniently enough, publishes a mid-season report over at coldomaha.com yesterday afternoon.
Yeah. Halfway through the season, this is the title. Minnesota Timberwolves are a Sisyphean task away from the playoffs. And I explained what that means if you don't know what a Sisyphean task is.
Well, we're going to get into that after we do these quick-hitting questions. 5 to 7 minutes of audio for these quick-hitting questions. Question number one, Tom Schreier. You're going to go, and then I'm going to either expound off what you said or go my own route. So let's hit this. What is your number one storyline of the season?
I was going to say third quarter specifically, but now it's pretty much second halves or just whenever the bad quarter shows up. That sounds like a lot, but it's basically the same thing, that they're not really playing a full 48 minutes, something that Tom Thibodeau addressed even in the off season and just said, hey, I don't think we're ready to be a 48-minute team. And they're sitting at about 36 to 40 minutes a night. Occasionally, they only play half a game. So if they had a more consistent, more complete play throughout the year, I think this team would be meeting or exceeding the expectations set for them in the off season.
Basically was my answer. My short answer is playing complete games. And
yep.
You know, you can broaden it out to the third quarter situation. You can broaden it to the fourth quarter situation, or as you did, playing a complete second half. I think it's critical for them to play well in crunch time, and they certainly have not done that. In games where they've been behind or tied by a total of 5 points, the Wolves have played 17 of those. They're 2-15 in those games. Ahead or behind, 5-15 is their record in those games. And if you are looking, which a lot of people can't do, I understand that. If you're looking at the media stats page on NBA.com, offensive rating, defensive rating, assist to turnover ratio, relative to where those metrics are and how the Wolves perform over the course of a game, they plummet during crunch time. So not only do they play well for long stretches of time, some of the stretches of time they don't play well in are the critical stretches, those at the end of the game.
At the very least, Tom Thibodeau, and I really appreciate this, has just been direct about it. He's like, the fourth quarter's different. The guys need to learn that, and they can't go rogue. Like, he doesn't mince words or pretend that something else isn't happening.
He's been refreshingly frank all season.
Yeah.
Question number two, who is better than you thought they would be, and who has been not as good as you would have expected?
The second part's harder. The first is Levine to me.
Same.
I could say Andrew Wiggins shot for a while, although that came back to earth a little bit. Jace Frederick, who covers it for St. Paul, had a really good story on that. But Zach Levine, in my mind, he kind of had to prove, is he on Wiggins' level? Now we're talking, Britt was on our podcast recently saying, are they too similar almost, right? And for Zach Levine, I think that's a big compliment. Wiggins obviously went to Kansas with a whole bunch of acclaim, came on the draft with a whole bunch of acclaim, came to Minnesota, and they're saying, this guy is the future of our franchise. Zach Levine himself, did you read Kent Youngblood's feature on him? He had a really good feature in the Star Tribune. And I guess Levine was telling people, he was hyping himself, obviously, and that's no surprise. He's very confident and a very good worker. But to me, he's someone who, A, it's great to see that kind of work pay off for a young player like that. B, he could really take this. I know that Towns is probably your number one star and always will be, and that Wiggins is a little more outgoing and very likable. Levine could be kind of the big character, though. I could see a big part of the Minnesota population, assuming this team can become relevant again, latching onto LaVine. He's a video gamer. He's a hard worker. He's an exciting player. He has a great personality. And so he's not only better than I thought, but is suddenly, I think, becoming a big three rather than you having two players and trying to figure out who kind of the third member of the big three will be.
Yeah, I totally agree. My answer was Zach LaVine as well. I think we've arrived at that point where the Wolves have a proverbial big three. I think the crowd tends to the crowd loves watching LaVine play. You can hear him.
He's exciting.
You know, react to all the shots and whatnot. And in a way that's noticeable statistically, LaVine has improved in many of the major categories that you would like to see him improve in: field goal percentage, 3-point percentage. He's doing it with, he's taking two more 3-point attempts a game. He's playing many more minutes a game. He's averaging 37.5. Last year it was 28. So he's getting more attempts. He's getting more time, and he's making the most of it by improving. Not always do you see that when players take that next step. His field goal percentage in catch and shoot situations, half court catch and shoot situations, ranks in the 95th percentile. Offensively, he's in the 89th percentile overall in terms of points per possession at 1.06 points per possession. So an extremely well-rounded and efficient offensive player, I think. Definitely, yeah. Being used
and you can
more under Thibodeau than he was with Sam Mitchell.
Yeah, and you could argue, I also like his 1-2 combination with Gorgui Dieng. I think that's a really nice deal to have. You could argue his defense isn't great. Wiggins, I think, came in as a good defensive player, and he's either figuring out the system or isn't as good defensively as I thought. And Towns either tries to do too much or just doesn't understand the system. Because, and again, that's really hard to tell, even if Britt says when he breaks down tape, he's like, well, he still doesn't know exactly how the scheme works or whatever. Obviously, Tibbs is going to keep that to himself. But
let's revisit that, because I think it's a good talker.
Yeah.
Disappointment. Disappointing player.
I'm going to go Shabazz Muhammad. I think he's a guy who we always talk, has he really improved since he came in the league? And I see the same player. I see a lot of strengths. I understand that he's had really good games off the bench. I also understand it's a really bad bench unit, and Tibbs really kind of just uses his starters a lot. But he's a guy I think will be a dynamic player in the league, whether or not it's in Minnesota or somewhere else.
Bold claim.
I think someone's going to figure him out. Again, not a great defensive player. He's kind of a slasher. I don't know how great his shot is. But at the end of the day, I think a smart coach will pick him up probably either in a throwaway trade or off the scrap heap and figure something out with him, because I think he has tools. I think the question is, especially in a place like Minnesota, where I think even at their best, even with a better bench, it's going to be very starter heavy, given that Tibbs' reputation of just playing players a ton. He just may just go cold because he doesn't get enough playing time or enough trust. He is, however, getting more minutes over Brandon Rush, who is supposed to be a big acquisition.
He's getting his chances, and he's not taking advantage of those chances.
Yeah, so, I mean, if that's your disappointment, I know people go with Chris Dunn, too. I just go, Chris Dunn, I think, has time to learn. I know he's older than most rookies, but he's still in his first year. Shabazz, to me, why I put him over Dunn is because he's been here in this, I know different coaches, but
it's
in this same situation for a while. Right.
If you've got something to bring to the table, you should have brought it by now, in the case of Shabazz Muhammad.
Yeah.
Neither of those players are my answer. Guess who my answer is?
Bielitsa?
Nemanja Bielitsa.
That, I could see that too. His defense was great. What was that?
When he's been used as the three, which was in two games, one against Charlotte and one against the LA Lakers.
Yeah.
Defensively, he matched up pretty well, and Tom Thibodeau, being the defensive mind that he is, understood that, and that's why Bielitsa started. I don't think you can start him at the three consistently. In terms of three-point shooting, he's at 31.4%. I mean, scouting.
He's missed open threes.
Before he came over, that was one of his, supposed to be his big skill sets that he could help the Wolves improve in. Not only is he not shooting them very well, he doesn't always know when to shoot them. He always, he's notoriously known for the pump fake. And then trying to make the extra pass, and it's like, dude, this isn't EuroLeague anymore. You're not playing on the Serbian national team right now. You don't need to do so much for your other teammates. You need to come in and understand your role. And he just hasn't done that. And I think that's the one thing specifically that drives people nuts in the case of Bielitsa. Just take the open shot. And it's funny because if you look at his splits, guarded versus unguarded, three-point percentage, or field goal percentage rather, he's unguarded, 22 of 46 in unguarded field goal attempts. Guarded, 11 of 50. So he's He's just not shot the ball well when he's defended. But when he's open, he makes it. The problem is he needs to take more of the shots when he's open because he's shown that he can make them. There's still time. I don't think he's a lost cause. But
his defense against Dallas actually was pretty good. And granted, it was Dallas. But he's a weird player. Like, he's a guy who really should be able to knock down open jumpers and kind of doesn't do that. He passes when he should shoot. And I don't understand him defensively. And the biggest weakness he has is really his trouble against those threes, which Tim Fakeless brought up recently, and I think that was a really good point. I like him offensively at the three. I don't like him defensively.
Yeah, and on Media Day, Tom Thibodeau said something to the effect of, we'd like to use Bjelica in 4-5 screen roles, and I don't think we've seen a lot of that. Whether he and Matt envisioned that Bjelica and Gorgui Dieng would run them, or Bjelica and Karl-Anthony Towns would run them, we just haven't seen a lot of them. I know at the beginning of the year, Cole Aldrich and him had a little bit going, but not so much lately.
Yeah.
Next question, depending on, are the Wolves buyers or sellers at the trade deadline?
It's a really good question. I hope they're, I mean, and I use buyers really lightly here. I hope they're sort of buyers there, though. Bringing in a veteran talent, I don't think you're going to get like a game changer. I don't know. I mean, given that you really
are you
don't
going with buyers or sellers?
I'm
going
to go with buyers because I think they should make the playoffs. I really
think they should
the
still continue to push.
I think that's the point. I mean, it's within reach. I think it would start to fill the building. I think it brings playoff excitement, which is something people haven't seen since 04, right?
Sure.
Yeah.
The type of player you're trying to get.
Big body, and if you can't get that, or if you can get it both in the same package, a veteran, another veteran voice in the locker room, just because I think it's hard to listen to Jordan Hill when he doesn't play much, and I think Brandon Rush has kind of his own things to worry about, and maybe he is being a great presence there, but I think you need someone else to really help stabilize the locker room.
I'm going with sellers, and I'm thinking that at this juncture, we've seen enough to know that it, you know, with the Brandon Rush thing and playing Shabazz Muhammad over him, I don't know if everything is being done for the Wolves to necessarily win games. I'm not sure. I can't say that. So if you're not committed to making that playoff push, which I'm not ready to say they are, I think maybe you can find a team looking for wing help who knows that Brandon Rush can help them, and all of a sudden Brandon Rush becomes more invested and engaged. If you think he's not that with the Wolves, you got a nice one-year rental, and you don't have to commit to him after the season.
Yeah.
There's Shabazz Muhammad, whose name's brought up. Quite often, any team who thinks that they could sign him in restricted free agency this summer certainly has a case there. The Wolves have Ricky Rubio has been mentioned in names, Tyus Jones. I mean, I just think they have pieces to sell if they want to sell. So if they need to be buyers or need to be sellers, I think it would benefit them more to sell than it would be to buy. I understand the value of making the playoffs and all that, but at this point, we're taking the long view with Tom Thibodeau, and selling, I think, would be the way to go.
The only issue I have with selling too at the deadline is that maybe the off season is better to move Rubio and Muhammad. I think you try to
maybe.
You know, the other thing too is then you also know if you have a pick or something to move to.
What is the key to the second half of the season to call it a success?
I'm going to say make the playoffs. I mean, they. I know that sounds insane, but keep in mind, it's because there's 8 bad teams or whatever in the conference. So
they're 4.5 games out of the ace.
Yeah, and so, again, people are going to say I'm nuts, and why are you doing that, especially when you can get a pick? I think a pick's another project. To my knowledge, and I don't know the draft as well, I've heard it's a more, like, there's a lot of good players in the middle, but it's not as top-heavy, which is in that kind of draft than draft in the middle with whatever you get, even as a playoff team. And I think you need to have playoff basketball because you need to have home field advantage next year. And I think if you put the playoffs, even if you're getting killed by Golden State, you bring the playoffs to Minneapolis, people will buy those season tickets. It'll start to fill the building next year. I really think that's very important to this franchise.
I think they just need to go 500 or better during the second half of the season. If they're at least involved in that, you know, 5-horse, 4-horse race for that A spot, gives people a reason to watch.
And to be clear, kind of piggyback off your point, if they come in 9th and they were really close, you go, okay. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's where they were projected to be. SI and ESPN, I believe, both had them at 9th in the West, right?
And that's fair. Yeah. So I think just win more games than you lose. And I think
play 48 minutes. Really, play 48 minutes.
Harkening back to the answer for question number one, just play complete games. I think Tom Thibodeau would be satisfied with that as well.
Right.
The one point I wanted to revisit, going rogue, as Tom Thibodeau calls it.
Right.
I'll call out Karl-Anthony Towns, and I'm not calling him out, but I do think he is somebody who although Thibodeau isn't mentioning him by name, I do think he is somebody who has gone rogue in crunch time situations, in the end of games, and hell, maybe throughout the course of four quarters of a game. Whenever things aren't going wrong, I think Karl-Anthony Towns is staying within the scheme. But when things get tight and plays need to be made, I think, you know, there was the whole narrative of hero ball at the beginning of the season, and I think that in large part was offensively, and guilty of that would be the big three, Levine, Wiggins, and Towns. But defensively, I don't think Towns is necessary. Criticized seems strong, but I do think he is going rogue in the sense that he's trying to make plays and he's leaving his duty to the scheme, and it's hurting the team. But what made me want to revisit that was your remarks about Andrew Wiggins' defense. Coming out, it was, you know, this guy can defend really well.
Yep.
And just wait for him to put weight on. You know, over time, he will become a good defender. He's still slim. His defense, you know, he's not a lockdown defender by any means. And I understand it's a scheme. But a lot of the time, I mean, they're playing Wiggins at the three. And in these last few games where Levine had to sit, the Wolves were able to win with Brandon Rush in the lineup, I think in large part because Rush was the three and it moved Wiggins to the two. And I think that helps Wiggins both offensively because it gives him, in theory, a smaller matchup to go against. But defensively, he's also going against an easier defensive assignment.
Yeah, so what's the long and the short of that? Because I'm trying to process all that.
Wiggins is a two when he's supposedly going to develop into a three, but
okay.
Let's pump, you know, maybe he doesn't ever develop into that three. Maybe he's a skinny body type and that's it. Then you get into redundancy questions with he and Levine.
Well, and the other thing too is if Bielitsa could guard threes,
go on.
You could have Wiggins play the two.
Sure.
Have him there because eventually.
If you're willing to move Levine to the bench.
And that's
the crux.
I know. And that's my point is that there's part of me that if Bielitsa, if I was confident that he took the right shots, made them when he's supposed to, and could guard threes, he could play that position. Wiggins for sure could play the two, although, yes, in an ideal world,
he
would
be
move to three. And then what you do is you go out in free agency and you get a really good big player and just tell Glenn, like, this is the last piece we need. This is what Pekovic was supposed to be, basically, to play alongside Towns. You know, obviously, if he wasn't hurt. My point being is that then you have Zheng and Levine coming off the bench playing a two-man game. And then if you wanted to go small, you move Wiggins down, put Levine at the two, put Zheng at the four and Towns at the five, and move your big guy to the bench. But an argument I've had a lot all season long, basically.
For now, we wait. We just wait and see. Here's a question. If Wiggins is the one hurt and Levine plays the two and Rush is at the three, you know, if just flip-flop them, Wolves could go 3-0, couldn't they? I mean, what could be the net difference with Wiggins out and Levine in?
Yeah.
I mean, do you see – I mean, you don't hear that and immediately think – oh, well, they'd be much worse defensively, right? In part because they haven't played great defense, but also because I just don't think Levine is still the defensive liability as he once was.
I agree with that. I also think, and this is my point in kind of my halfway article, is that Tibbs is not only – I still think they're trying to win, and I really just don't think it's in his nature to tank unless he gets orders to do so or, you know, President Tibbs tells Coach Tibbs, you got to tank because we're not making the playoffs. I think he wants to win his own way. I think he knows Brandon Rush is not part of the equation, and I think if they were trying to win more games
– Brandon Rush would play more.
Brandon Rush would play more. I mean, maybe see some semblance of Jordan Hill. I think – you maybe use Aldridge a little bit more too. I mean, he has been using him, and Aldridge did have a weird, like, he was either injured or something was going on, or, you know, midway through the season. I also would argue maybe you play Rubio more. I think he knows that Dunn is having issues right now, but he wants Dunn to be his point guard. And I think he's playing a few, and this is in my piece here, he's playing a few things out, stringing them out to see as kind of the president. He wants to see, can Dunn be good enough to replace Rubio? Is Shabazz Muhammad a six-man option? how much can you get out of LaVine? I think he's running a few of these pairings out there, and that's more valuable to him than winning a few games because he knows they could win a whole bunch of games here and still end up the ninth seed.
I have a question.
Yeah.
You said they're still trying to win.
Yeah.
And then you went on that little tangent.
He wants to win his way.
Got
it.
Does
that make sense?
Yes.
That's a fair question. And this is what I kind of put in my article here.
Because you sort of there's a contradictory thing there.
Right. So it's not as though he's doing everything to win, because I think he could stabilize the team with more veteran presence. I think there's arguments to be made that Rubio, because he's playing so well, you could run the offense through him entirely. I think this is how this man operates, to my knowledge. He is saying, I want to win, but I'm only happy if it's done my way. And I think he's also coaching as the president. I've said this before, but the fact that he's holding two positions is also influencing his decisions on the court.
So he wants to win his way, and if they don't win his way and they lose, oh well.
Yeah.
At least you can sleep at night.
Oh, and I think he also answers.
Or he can sleep at night.
Here's the other thing, too, and I should probably do a full article just on this. It is in his best interest to answer as many questions in year one as possible, because if you're answering them in year two and three, you might not be making the progress you want to make. And at the end of the day, he will sleep in the bed that he makes. So year four and five, the decisions he makes in 1, 2, 3 are going to affect him and him alone. It's not as though he's the coach and it's going to hurt the GM, because he's essentially both. It's not as though he's the president and he's going to hurt the coach, because he's not going to fire himself. Right. So I think
that would take a bold man to do that.
It'd be pretty funny. Can you imagine the postgame press? He's like, I'm out. Who's coaching this team?
Is he firing himself or is he resigning?
I don't know. Right.
What's the anecdote you used in the piece, though? Because I think we needed to mention.
Yeah. So Sisyphus was this.
Name is Sisyphus. First and last name.
Yeah. I believe so. It's Greek mythology. So he's the king of Epheria. I had to look up all this. I knew the basics of it. But he basically was punished for his self-aggrandizing and craftiness and deceitfulness by being forced to roll a boulder up a large hill, only to watch it come back and hit him for the rest of eternity. So this is obviously when he's in Hades, their version of hell. The wolves I see as kind of the kids are pushing this boulder up the hill. Everyone's like, oh, they make great progress halfway through. Then as soon as the incline goes up in the second half, whatever the analogy is, one of them goes, Talon's like, I got this. And then the thing goes down. And then LaVine the next time goes, I got this. And then it rolls down. And then Wiggins goes, I got this. And then it rolls down. And I think what Tibbs is saying is everyone push the boulder. Like, stop doing it on your own. Stop going rogue. And you have to push it all the way over the hill. You can't stop halfway, three quarters of the way through.
March in unison.
And in some ways, I think Tibbs also is thinking, I could probably break the boulder. Like, I bet I could just hit it hard enough to break it. Like, he has just this kind of force of personality, force of will that he, I'm not going anywhere. That's one of his quotes. And, I'm going to figure out. And I feel like he's just going to drill the concepts right into their heads. And they're going to stop going rogue because they're going to get sick of him yelling at them, in the locker room or even on the court side. So my point being is, I think it's a perfect analogy for this season. You're like, eventually it will get over the hill. They're not going to be Sisyphus. They're not going to be doing this for the rest of eternity. But until they figure out that one of them can't push the boulder, it's going to roll back and they're going to have to do it over again. And it's frustrating for everyone involved. Tibbs is at wit's end. The players are kind of at a loss of words. The fans are, those that are still going, are like, come on, I don't want to see this for the third time or whatever, the third game I went to. So
I don't want to write this recap again.
Right. So that's the analogy I used. And in the piece, I talk about the other things, why he's coaching as president, why they should go for the playoffs. I do explore the option or the argument for why they should tank and get another player. But in 1,500 words or whatever, however long I wrote this, I try, and using video and stuff from the post game, I try to show how Tom Thibodeau's approaching this, what the players are thinking, and more than anything, just the options that they have and why they should explore one over the other.
You really tend to flip-flop, don't you? They're still trying to win. They want to make the playoffs, but they should tank for another player. I just don't know what to think.
I'm just exploring all options and showing you exactly what I think, which is Thibodeau wants to win. He wants to win his own way, and that making the playoffs is the best option for
him in
the second half.
I like it.
That's the piece.
I like it. Get this man. Never mind. I won't go that far. Wolves play the Spurs tonight, I suppose. What are you doing tonight, Tommy?
I don't know what I'm doing. I'll probably watch the game, but I'm going to play basketball here pretty soon.
You want to come back in after the Spurs game, record tomorrow's Lockdown Wolves podcast?
We could double down. Spurs are a big, yeah.
Why the hell not?
Sounds good.
I mean, they play Thursday again against the Clippers on national TV. So,
there's a tough schedule.
I think there's enough. Tonight's game might produce it. We'll play it by ear.
Right.
You know,
because
if heaven forbid something happens in which, you know, I'm not even going to say what could potentially happen that would render us to come in here, you know, no questions asked. But, you know, that could always happen. So we'll keep it open. Like traveling to Europe. We'll restrain from making set plans and just sort of play it by ear. So for Tom Schreier, at TSCHREIER 3 on Twitter, my name is Zachary Bennett, at Zachary BD. This has been the Locked On Wolves podcast. Until tomorrow, so long.
You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
With the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.